You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to A Pirate's Life for Me on The Sports Objective. Join us every Friday at noon as we catch up with a member of Pirate Nation. Here's your host, Bubba Rosenbaum.
What is going on, Pirate Nation? Welcome into the debut episode of A Pirate's Life for Me here on the Sports Objective NC State Week. We're 24 hours away. You know, so much excitement about this matchup between the Pirates and the 13th-ranked Wolfpack. And now we're going to take a trip down memory lane on this debut episode. Very excited to have with us somebody that's a friend, but then also the first quarterback to lead East Carolina to a victory over the Wolfpack back in 1971. Welcome in John Cazaza. John, we appreciate your time this afternoon.
I appreciate you having me, Bubba. Good seeing you.
No doubt. I really look forward to this conversation, and also obviously look forward to that matchup on Saturday between the Wolfpack and the Pirates at 12 noon on ESPN at Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium. But, you know, before we really dive into East Carolina NC State, you know, just tell Pirate Nation about how you got to East Carolina, because I know you came to Greenville from the Northeast.
Yes. I first went down to Chowan Junior College, and I was there a year and semester, just two football seasons. And I believe we actually played East Carolina back then when the freshmen couldn't play football. We played the freshman team, and I had an outstanding game, and Jerry McGee was down there with the football team. And anyway, they wound up recruiting me, and I played in 70 and 71. Mike McGee, of course, was 70. And like I said, it was a pretty embryonic era, a new era in football, because Stasevich went and took the AD job. And so there wasn't a quarterback under the center in 16 years. Single wing, but anyway we put the multiply in and split back beer, and you know the beer is tough enough, a whole learning process, and you need a lot of work on it, but we did the best we could. That first year we played state. That's first year we ever played state, and we had a ton of Pirate fans in the stands, and both teams weren't very good, and it was kind of one of them ugly football games, but we lost. And the next year, in 71, we were much better. We found the people that left that were in the Stasevich era. We filled in with JUCOs also, and we got much better in the veer and in the passing game and stuff. And we executed very well that night. Our running backs, Billy Wallace, Les Strayhorn, the Horn, and Crumpler got hurt early, and Rusty Scales came in and did some good stuff. And then Jack Patterson had a super game returning the football. He had about 140 yards, which helped a whole lot. And we just kept the ball, and, you know, the Bear will do that. And we wound up beating 31-15, and it was an awesome win. It was my biggest win in those 2 years. And I think we got back 2 or 3 in the morning in Greenville, and the place was packed. The police had the place blocked off, and students were going crazy. We were hanging out the bus, and it was a super thing. And what it did is it started a rivalry that lasted for a while, and where East Carolina had some good football games, and state, unfortunately, probably beat us more through that period of time. But anyway, the 1971 game was probably the foundation for what was to come at East Carolina football.
Yeah, no doubt. And you talk about the rivalry. Obviously, it's remains a rivalry, but at the same time, it's different now. The programs typically play every 3 years. That's been the trend over the last 12 to 15 years. You know, but prior to that, you know, going back to 1970s and 1987, there were 18 consecutive meetings, with all of those coming at Carter-Finley Stadium. And that was something that, you know, kind of going down a different path here, just from the perspective of the rivalry, is having made those 18 consecutive trips to Raleigh. You know, East Carolina fans almost viewed it as a neutral site of sorts, you know, from the standpoint of, hey, at least for the time being, that's going to be the way it was, playing at Carter-Finley Stadium. You know, and then in that 87 game, the goalposts were torn down. And it's easy to see the perspective, you know, from the East Carolina side of things after having made 18 straight trips to Carter-Finley.
Well, that's true. And, you know, the whole thing about it, whether win or lose and playing away from home every football game, the average crowd was around 55,000. And there was a whole lot of purple and gold. So it was just amazing. And that's why it became such a rivalry. But the incident that occurred in 87 was a little crazy. As students, and there were some fights, tore their goalpost down, and all that. So put an end to it until the Peach Bowl. What's the Peach Bowl? I believe so.
But yeah. That 1991 season, obviously January 1st in 92.
Right. Yeah. And we came back and a tight end made that great catch and we wound up beating State. And I guess that kind of initiated, you know, the next chapter in the backyard brawl thing, which they called it in the book was published about. That 1970 to 87, where it stopped initially, but it was pretty much that.
And you bring up the crowds. Obviously, I think it was 46,000 as far as the capacity with the seating. You know, as far as bleachers, but then you had the large bank, and you know, despite the capacity being listed there, like I said, in the mid 40s, you had crowds well up into the 50,000s. And I remember, you know, probably in the mid to late 90s, looking at a top 10 attendance for the state of North Carolina for college football, and something like 7 or 8 out of the 10 games was East Carolina NC State.
Yes, and that's because of that, the name itself, Backyard Brawl. It was such a rivalry. And, you know, the ECU fans, they almost felt internally committed to be at that football game. No matter what. And the atmosphere was simply awesome. You were talking about behind that goalpost on the field, and there were just people that had, you couldn't see the grass. You know, it was like that. So, you know, it was a big game. And, you know, big game for ECU and a big game for State for all those years, regardless of them being in that conference where there's a lot of tough football teams.
You know, that game specifically, it actually started a three-game win streak toward the end of that 1971 season. And, you know, as you took a look at that matchup, like you said, it was two teams that were, you know, pretty hungry for a victory. And, you know, what are your best memories of the atmosphere that night at Carter-Finley Stadium before you had headed back east with the victory?
Well, you know, that's kind of funny for me because the time I notice the atmosphere is prior to, you know, in warmups and stuff. Once I play, it's just kind of, you know, I tune that out and I'm I just get focused. I don't know if that's freaky, but I pretty much did that. But yeah, initially when I looked around, talk about being a little shaky and nervous and everything. It raised that, I don't know how much. The place was just packed. I've never played in that kind of atmosphere before. So it was something else. And I'm just grateful that we all had a darn good football game.
Back then, you know, now you play 12 games. Back then, your regular season was 10 games. And both of those first two matchups between East Carolina and NC State occurred in mid to late October. And so that's something that eventually changed. I'm not sure what year. I can't recall right off the top of my head when it began to be, you know, pretty much the season opener. You know, you had the much anticipated in-state rivalry to open the year.
Yeah, well, you know, like I told you earlier, it's probably good you know, of course, we're in the same situation. Both teams are starting opening their first football game. And all you could hope for is let's not have any fumbles and intercept turnovers that are going to really hurt our football team. And by playing state, let's hope they do. But, you know, going from opening game, you know, maybe we would have won more football games. Maybe we would have had a better opportunity to win that first game if we played them in October, you know, as opposed to the first football game. But I don't quite, maybe you do, quite understand why they would change that, even though, you know, we're going to fill their place and definitely our place is going to be packed. And I can't even believe what it might be like this Saturday.
So. Yeah, the future of this series, kind of as you just referenced, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, like I've already mentioned, pretty much every 3 years, after this year, we have 2025 in Raleigh, 2028 in Greenville, and I think those are the only two games currently on the books. So beyond 2028, it'll be interesting to see what happens or does not happen in this series. Hopefully both sides can agree to extend the series and play at least every 3 years, if not more frequently.
Well, I can see that, and that's a good future. As long as we leave, each of us leave, both sides leave the goalposts alone, perhaps.
Yeah. A lot of times, you know, you hear about the North Carolina-NC State rivalry, and NC State certainly cannot stand the Tar Heels, and that's something that most – NC State and East Carolina fans do agree on, but yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. And you know, thinking back over the years, this series, you know, certain things come to mind. Obviously, the Peach Bowl and the tremendous comeback there. But I think back to when I was 6 years old, that 1987 game that we already referenced. I remember my dad, you know, leaning in, you know, when we were up a couple scores there late in the game. Just saying, hey, you know, be ready if I tell you to duck, or you know, be ready to get out of here because these folks in red are likely to start throwing stuff. And obviously, 32-14 victories that night. And then you think about the '96 game where Scott Harley ran for a little over 350 yards, 351, I believe, to be exact, down in what was then Arrowhead Stadium.
That was spectacular.
And then that '99 game, the first game in Greenville, where David Garrard made David Garrard, I don't think, was necessarily a huge talker, but he did have some comments, you know, reached the media in that one, or I mean, whether it made directly to the media or not. And he was talking about how they wanted to send 5-6 NC State home for the holidays, you know, or where they were not going to become bowl eligible. I guess maybe 5-5 at the time, but and David Garrard was able to back it up in a very run-oriented game plan. He had a couple of long touchdown runs on options.
Yeah, I do remember that football game. And you're talking about, you know, in the future and the years you were talking about that we're going to be playing, like I said, you know, let's hope that that can create, you know, the situation and bring back that backyard brawl and this intensive rivalry. Which, you know, I think, you know, I don't know so much about North Carolina State, but I know East Carolina can certainly use that rivalry. And opening up in the beginning of the year, I don't know if that's going to be the same situation down the road. But if it is, winning that football game initially against North Carolina State can certainly change your whole program and your season that year. So it can be big, and it needs to come back, and it's starting to ease back. This is initial game here where it certainly can help that, and hopefully we can have an excellent football game.
Yeah, we've been hearing for several months now, and I guess rightfully so. You know, with everything NC State returns, such high expectations, and the possibility of having the best team in school history. You know, you think back to some of those Phillip Rivers teams. I think one in particular won 11 ball games and defeated Notre Dame. I think it was in the Gator Bowl, and the Wolfpack really believe that they have a chance to win the ACC and maybe even, you know, sneak into the college football playoff this year?
Well, you know, again, the quarterback, I mean, they were even talking about, you know, Heisman initially, you know, throwing him in that top group or whatever. But when you got 10 out of 11 starters back on defense, that's tough. You know, because defense wins championships. You know, you heard that before.
No doubt. Sorry, I had some lag there. But as you've seen in recent years under veteran O-line coach Steve Shankweiler, and as more talent has been brought into the program, the offensive line has steadily improved, and they'll certainly have their work cut out for them on Saturday afternoon against a very talented front for NC State. And they're saying the linebacker core may be as good as any in the country.
It'll be a challenge, and every game's a challenge. You know, it's no different than if you were playing. I don't care, but it's a challenge. You play hard, and you go every snap, and you do the best you possibly can. And if they're that much better all around, then they are. But we got to play hard, like I said. And the biggest thing is no mistakes, you know, fumbles and turnovers in serious position on the football field and those kind of things. And a clean game is going to help us. There's no doubt. But it's going to be tough. But, boy, it would be a big victory.
Hey, John, take us back prior to those 1970 and 71 matchups. And we talked about the atmosphere at the game, but, you know, leading into the game in the weeks and months, once you knew those games were going to be played, you know, talk about what it was like around campus and, you know, how Coach McGee and also Coach Randall, how they handled, the practices and so forth leading into that much anticipated matchup.
Well, you know, we were pretty specific on our practices. Now, when you're trying to deal with, you know, a particular team, you know, we probably spent more time with McGee on fundamentals and things like that than you normally would with a football team because of the transition. You know, the preparation part, we always come into the ball game, and particularly them, about we need to run the beer and we need to read it and run it well and block it well so we can keep the football. And, you know, that was a philosophy when we entered into the ball game. And we certainly did that. You know, I thought we did, and I thought we did a great job. I threw one touchdown pass. Carl Gordon, may he rest in peace. He had an air balloon accident many, many years ago. But anyway, he caught that pass. But, like I said, we ran the ball. And, you know, just threw a few just to keep them balanced. So our philosophy coming in that game was veer them to death. That was it.
You mentioned the name Carl Lester Crumpler, obviously talking about Crump Sr., a 6'4", 6'5", running back, and he was really recruited by everyone. You heard stories, you know, whether it's USC, you know, who had so many tremendous running backs during that era. And, and beyond that, just talk about what Crump was like as a running back in those early 70s seasons.
Well, it's funny. Like you said, he probably had opportunities to go a lot of places because of his speed and his physical size, which is, you know, two great things for a running back. And he was that big, we were talking about. But when he came to East Carolina, he came with his high school football coach and his high school trainer, Ronnie Barnes. So all three of them came down there together. I don't know if that had something to do with getting him there. But he certainly
coach,
was talented.
Coach Henry Trevathan, right?
Coach Henry Trevathan. He was at Wilson Fike. That's where Crumper played, and that's where Ronnie Barnes was. And Ronnie was a little kid. You know, he became our assistant kind of trainer, you know, that kind of thing. And now look at him. You know, he was just inducted into the Hall of Fame and everything, and retiring, the Hall of Fame of the Giants and everything else. So that's an amazing little story right there in itself. But Crumper, I didn't, you know, I really didn't get to play with him a whole lot. You know, my senior year is about about when I played with Crump. And like I said, he was just super talented. If you gave him a little bit of grass, I mean, he could be gone. Now, his stride was unbelievable. But we had two good running backs, and we switched him then. And he was a sophomore my senior year. And he switched up with Strayhorn, which both were super talented running backs. Strayhorn played, I don't know, 4 years or so or five in the NFL. And Crump went there for a couple of years. So they were super talented. And it's hard to believe that I even had the opportunity to play with those kind of guys.
And we mentioned that name, Henry Trevathan. Coach Trevathan, obviously, as you just mentioned, spent those years at East Carolina. And then later on, you know, he was actually on the Peach Bowl staff, on Dick Sheridan's staff. A little nugget there for our viewers and listeners about Coach Trevathan, you know, who's so well known and just really a legend in the state of North Carolina in the coaching ranks in the sport of football. And then, you know, his son has spent several years now. I believe he may still be on staff for Dave Dorn in an off-the-field administrative role.
Yeah, I love Coach Trevathan. He was a super guy, you know, and back when he first rolled in there, he had really the freshman team. He was over the top of them, but he was also coaching varsity football positions also. But he was just a super guy. He motivated you, but he had a great heart, and you know, you just learned to love him. He was one of them kind of guys, you know. He put his arm around you, and I just love him to death.
Yeah, I had the opportunity, very blessed to be able to meet Coach Trevathan back in December of 2018 when we had our 40th anniversary party, a live podcast at Professor O'Cool's, as it was then, in Greenville, right there in the Big Lot Shopping Center behind Logan's Roadhouse. Right. And that was a lot of fun getting to meet Coach Trevathan. You know, I'm trying to remember that, and that, of course, was nearly 4 years ago now, but he was in – I don't know, I want to say 91, 92, something like that at the time, but you would have never known it. I believe he still had a farm in the Wilson area. And
yeah, I heard that.
Seemed much younger than his age.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, of course, I see him at the Letterman's weekend under the tent and stuff and everything. And it's just amazing when I hear how old he was, and, you know, and just talk to him and everything, and being very cognitive and everything, you know. I mean, and hopefully that'll go on for many more years. I love the guy, and I was blessed to be able to play for him.
So, John, you know, in your years since leaving East Carolina, just talk about, I know you had the opportunity to have an excellent coaching career, multiple sports, including football at High Point Andrews. And you talk about that experience and the way you had the opportunity to impact young people.
Yes. And I was so glad that I was a teacher, coach, and athletic director for 32 years, actually for about 38, but 32 at Andrews. It wasn't a job, you know. You're trying to help kids. You're trying to build character, even save some in situations. Teachers are able to come to you, and then you can help them academically. Just love my job. And Andrews, when I got there, it was a great school. Demography was super. The kids were super. We had great athletes. I got there in 75, and in 76, the next season, we won the 4A state championship and kind of established a tough program at Andrews year in and year out. And we won a few more state championships. But the biggest thing was, actually, when I first got there in 75, I got hired as a football coach. And they said, by the way, you got to coach tennis. I said, tennis? I was from a place in Central Jersey, pretty tough place. I never seen a tennis court in my life. But they had concrete tennis courts with chain link nets and had basketball courts on it because it was run by the park system or something. It was in our back of our campus. But anyway, they were a terrible team, and I committed myself. You know, I told about all the years I coached football and success and worked hard. The biggest thing I'm proud of is what I've done with a tennis program that was 0-18, 0-18. you know, wooden racket era. That's when we started. I took lessons, you know, pretty good athlete. And I fell in love with the game. And then I worked kids, took, you know, different hours during the summer, even two at a time. And I really worked hard at it and turned the program around. We were 5 or 6 state championships. So, it was a big deal. Got rid of the chain link nets and got, you know, got them asphalted, painted, and this kind of thing. So, very proud of that. But of course, football and the guys and the young men that I hear from today, and they're doing well, and the things they say about me sometimes brings tears to my eyes. But it's all worth it. And golly, it wasn't a job, if you know what I mean.
And one of the crazy things, kind of a crazy story, just, you know, I certainly knew of you quarterbacking the Pirates, and then, you know, your son Joey at Ragsdale. Back then I didn't realize, you know, your time in High Point Andrews.
Yeah, well, I actually went over there for 3 years to coach at Ragsdale and my son, but I was still at High Point Andrews.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was right down the road from High Point Andrews. It's like, you know, 3 miles. So principal allowed me to do that and gave me, you know, 4th period planning. And I was able to do that. And my second year there, we got beaten the state championship by a super loaded Hickory team, but got to the state championship. So,
right.
Not that.
No, not at all. But, you know, kind of a final thing for you here as we start to wrap this up. You know, taking a look at the 2022 Pirates, you talked about the improvement made, and I referenced the improvement on the offensive line in particular. You know, how do you see this 2022 season playing out? Last year, the Pirates were 7-5. Unfortunately, didn't get to play the bowl game against Boston College up in Annapolis. But this year, really high expectations, expecting to, you know, definitely get back to a bowl and hopefully be a contender in the American.
Well, I certainly do love their head football coach. He's a super guy. And offensive line, the improvement, I mean, how significant is that? That's super significant. And that's one of the places that, you know, people talk about other skilled positions and stuff. But, you know, if we open up the holes and we give them time, you know, it makes all the world difference. So hopefully this season we can get a good start with this football game and build as it goes along. And I'm hoping for some great things and a Super Bowl game.
Yeah, I think Saturday will, you know, as we're recording this, for full disclosure, on Wednesday afternoon, drop at noon on Friday. 20 hours from kickoff between the Pirates and Wolfpack. As of a day or two ago, 2,000 tickets were remaining, and I think those will be, you know, gobbled up between now and kickoff at noon on Saturday.
Oh, it'll be packed.
Yeah, it's going to be a tremendous atmosphere, the best atmosphere in at least 6 years, if not more, you know, going back to when East Carolina defeated NC State in 2016. You know, before we get out of here, I meant to throw this up a little bit earlier, but I have a blast from the past for you, as well as our viewers. You know, I know you have fond memories of these pictures.
Yes, I do. And look at that hair. it's amazing. And that scoreboard, it just tells it all how exciting it was. It was a super victory. And it'll stick with me forever.
No doubt. Love taking trips like this down memory lane and hearing East Carolina letter winners talk about the history and, you know, landmark victories. You know, when a lot of folks did not think that East Carolina would be able to compete on such a stage, and, you know, where the program went after that under Coach Dye, Coach Emery, et cetera, all the way up through the 90s with Coach Logan and beyond. But, John, really appreciate your time this afternoon. Really look forward to catching up with you this weekend in Greenville as the Pirates and Wolfpack do battle once again on the gridiron.
Sounds good. And looking forward to seeing you, and save me a parking spot.
Will do. Pirate Nation, that is former East Carolina quarterback and the first to defeat the NC State Wolfpack back in 1971, John Casazza. We appreciate everyone tuning in to A Pirate's Life for Me in this debut episode right here on the Sports Objective. And, you know, have a great weekend, everyone. And as always, go Pirates.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
Everyone I copy that. Everybody gonna see it's go bananas. Speed that.